not woke. Make that clear. Awake, not woke.
Hello, initiates, and welcome to another episode of the Awake Not Woke podcast. As always, my name is Sarah, and this is episode 41. And what is the word? The word is word. We are talking about words today, and you might kind of be like, why are you doing that? You're usually talking about conspirituality and stuff like that. Well, words are important. Language is important. And when you are studying the occult and religion, the Bible, stuff like that, you really need to pay attention to semantics and etymology and the meanings behind words. So I thought this was an important episode to have, especially prior to next week's episode, which we are going to be talking about John 14 from the Bible. And it's important to really pay close, tedious attention to words in the Bible. So we're going to be talking about why words are important and giving you some examples, all that good stuff. But before we get to the episode, make sure you follow us on Instagram at Awake Not Woke Podcast. We also have a website, awakenotwokepodcast.com. There is a contact page on our website if you want to hit us up, send us an email, give your comment, question, concern, future episode ideas, or you just want to say hi, you can DM us or that contact page on the website. It would also be much appreciated if you left us a review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. That helps boost the algorithms, shows our podcast to more people, so that would be extremely appreciated. And while you're there, make sure you hit that follow or subscribe button on whatever app you may be using so you get notified when our new episodes drop on Sundays at 4:44 a.m. Eastern Time. If you find yourself getting a lot of value from this podcast, whether it's education, deep thinking, or entertainment, whatever that value means to you, consider reimbursing it back to us through our value for value model. We have an Etsy shop as of right now where you can choose your own price for some really cool merch, or just donate to us and show us your appreciation and allow us to continue this awesome project that we are providing to you. So if you want to participate in our value for value shop, the link is in the show notes. You can click on that and check everything out. And while you're on Etsy, check out my co-host Chas's Etsy 5D Impressions shop, where she makes hand stamped jewelry and apparel and all kinds of cool stuff. Check her out as well. And without further ado, let's get on to the episode 41 of the Awake Not Woke podcast with your host, myself, and Chas. Enjoy. Hey, it's Sarah and Chas. Welcome back to Awake Not Woke podcast.
Hello.
Today we are going to be talking about words.
Word.
With words.
Yeah. There's actually a phrase for that. We'll learn about that in a second.
So it's kind of a broad sort of topic, but I think there's a lot of good points to be made, especially in some of our coming episodes where we talk a lot about different ways that you can interpret certain words, define certain words, and kind of how that translates into our thoughts, spirituality, a little bit of conspiracy stuff in there too. So hope you like it.
Yeah. So this is a topic that I feel like initially is like, why are you talking about that?
Right.
Why it's awake, not woke. Like, it's not really conspiracy. It's not really spirituality, but it is. It's really important because words are how we communicate. I mean, there are other forms of communication, like nonverbal language, body language, sign language is a language. So that's not the same thing, but language is a very unique and special thing to humans. It's the only species that has a language. Other animals have, again, ways of communicating, but it's not as nuanced as what a language is.
Yeah.
So let's get into a little about just like defining what we're going to be talking about here, because Linguistics is the study of language and its structure. Just the overall arching category of what we're talking about is linguistics. But linguistics has a lot of other categories that we don't really care about right now, like phonetics and phonology and sociolinguistics and stuff like that. And there's a lot of these like subcategories that are interesting, but not exactly what we're talking about today. But the subcategories we're kind of interested in, at least I am, and what I'm thinking of when I was taking notes for this episode, are going to be semantics, which is the area of linguistics that is interested in the meaning of words and the many ways we can describe our language. And then etymology, which is the study of the origin of words and the way in which their meanings have changed throughout history. So those two subjects are going to add a depth to your perception when you're studying anything. And especially when it comes to spirituality, it's really important to pay attention to words, because what words mean is very speculative when it comes to spirituality. I mean, the Bible is a big poem, confusing story with riddles everywhere. So
parables and just all kinds of stuff.
So the nuances are in the words, in the meanings, in the history of the words, in the way these words change over time. And that's what we want to talk about today. We want to talk about those nuances. And there's another interesting concept in linguistics that you already kind of brought up, which is called metalinguistic awareness. So that is consciously reflecting on the nature of language. And when you do this, and when you start to reflect on these minor things that seem very small, it can really profoundly impact the way you see the world, because you start to notice things, you start to pick up on things. For example, there are oftentimes ways of being able to tell that people, for example, like from our thoughts episode, when somebody is regurgitating words that are not their own, they end up using the same words that they hear. This is just the first thing that comes to my mind when I think of like metalinguistic awareness, because now that I think this way about words, I pay attention to the words that are used in, for example, the media. And when the news anchors or NPR or CBS or NBC or whatever, when they have a news story that uses certain words, I take note of those.
Yeah.
And then I hear people around me regurgitating those exact same words. And that is one example of this. But there are also just countless things you can begin to pick up on when you start paying attention to words, even in literature, in magazines, in news articles online. You start to see the subtle implications behind the words. Another good one is died with COVID or died of COVID.
Right.
That was a very intentional wording at the beginning of this pandemic. Everyone died with COVID, not necessarily from COVID, died with COVID.
Sneaky.
And that is semantics. That's paying attention to the meanings of these words. Because if you're not paying attention and somebody says, yeah, my uncle died with COVID, you're going to say, oh my gosh, I'm so sorry that COVID killed them. It's like, no, he got shot.
Like still sucks.
Yeah. Still sucks for your dead uncle, but it's going to slip right by you if you're not used to paying attention to those things. So that's kind of the categories we're talking about today. Another thing I wanted to mention early on in this conversation about words is that words and language are at their base just sounds, and sounds are vibrations, and vibrations are energy.
Yeah.
So not only is it important to pay attention to the meaning of words, pay attention to how words have changed and evolved to where they are today, but it's important to pay attention to the words you're speaking.
Yeah.
And the words, and words come from thoughts. So listen to the thoughts episode for more information on that, but your words are impactful, just as impactful as your thoughts. So if you are speaking positive words versus negative words, or if you're speaking present tense words versus future tense or past tense words,
yeah,
those are going to make an impact.
It's like that water and the plant thing that we were talking about before, where if you like, they did that experiment where they spoke positive words to a glass of water and negative ones, and like the ice that formed in them
was for sure
totally different.
Yeah, there were, it was the study of these ice crystals, and this guy would say like, I love you and you're beautiful to some of the water. And then he would say like, I hate you and negative things to some of the water. And then the ice crystals that were positively affirmed were very beautiful in structure and the crystals that formed. And then the ones that were negative were just very chaotic and terrible. Now that study allegedly has never been able to be reproduced. So there's a lot of skeptics about that particular study. But I still think I've seen information both ways. I think conspiratorially, there are some people who think that the reproductions of it were purposely done poorly so as to discredit the study. So I don't know. That's like something, I feel like we should have a water episode and talk about water and its structure and everything and talk about that in more detail there. Yeah. Even though it does kind of make sense in the words episode two, but that is,
I mean, it does kind of make sense. You know, I was just thinking like that can even translate to the way that we talk to ourselves.
Oh, for sure.
You know, when you talk to yourself in a good manner, whether that's like looking in the mirror and saying your positive affirmations or just viewing yourself in a positive light, it does change the way that you look and appear towards yourself, but also to others. It changes how you present yourself overall. So I think that with the energy behind the words, it's very, very valid. And I don't think we need any studies to prove that. Like you can just practice it in your mirror for a day and see the difference.
Absolutely.
There.
Yeah, for sure. But even at its most logical understanding, the idea that words are just these arbitrary sounds that we have assigned this meaning to, and then over time they grow and become more powerful, in the idea that if I say, I don't know, car in English, you know exactly what I'm talking about. Maybe we could go in more detail, like what kind of car is it? Is it a truck? Is it an SUV? Is it a sports car? But you know I'm talking about some type of motorized vehicle. That is literally just That's it. That's all that is, that sound that I made. And you immediately knew what I was talking about.
Yeah.
We as a human species assigned those random sounds a meaning, and all of a sudden we know what it means. That's really powerful. Yeah. So over time, these words that we use and the vibrations that we are creating, we are assigning meaning to, and it already has a deep psychological meaning to these words. So we can't change what the words mean, but we can change the words we use. And that's hugely powerful.
And I think also from a conspiracy standpoint, while we may not be able to change the meaning of certain words, they can certainly change the description. I mean, take the whole man, woman. What does it mean to be a woman? Mm-hmm. What does it mean to be a man? There's a lot of energetic principles that we could talk about, but just simply existing as a woman, like that's completely different in 2022 than it was 10, 20, 30, 40, 50 years ago. And it's definitely different than it was in the beginning or whatever, you know?
In the beginning.
There's a few verses that I wrote down in relation to this sound, frequency, energy with words from the Bible. One of them, which I think we just need to eventually have an entire episode on the book of John.
Yeah.
Future episode alert. We're going to be breaking down a specific set of verses in John. But in doing that, I kind of started reading more and more of that particular book of the Bible. And John 1:1, everybody's probably heard this or heard some variation of it, but in the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. So taking the concept, like you were saying, where words are just frequency, God is energy, frequency. God is frequency. So that's, I think, how I'm understanding that verse. In the beginning, there was just energy. There was just God. So that was really kind of, eye-opening to see from a different perspective when thinking about how our words are impactful. Also from a conspiracy standpoint, there's a verse, Proverbs is a book in the Bible, I believe, if I'm not mistaken. It's a lot of parables, a lot of symbolism.
It's like advice.
Yeah. And there's a lot of stories, basically, that you can kind of gain knowledge from. The whole point of a...
Parable
is to gain insight, whether that be moral, spiritual, whatever. Proverbs 12:6 says, the words of the wicked are like murderous ambush, but the words of the godly save lives.
I love that.
Yeah.
That's beautiful.
It's beautiful. And I also think it very much so can apply to the social engineers because you were saying, died with COVID, died of COVID. You can take it and slice it in so many different ways, but that verse in particular really struck a chord with me when I started to think about the ways that our media uses very intentional words, even going back to the Bohemian Grove episode, the words that they used in their play. It was very intentional.
And carrion.
Yeah. So it's really important to remember that these positive or negative words, whatever you want to call them or characterize them as, they genuinely do have power. And the reason is because they're not just some letters written on a piece of paper.
No.
They hold a lot of energy and a lot of power.
They hold all of human history within them. Because like you said, the social engineers, it's not like I can just change the definition of a word, but the social engineers can go on Webster Dictionary and change the definition of any fucking word they want. And they have with a lot of modern words. For example, what is the word I'm like?
I don't know. I'm trying to.
Herd immunity. There we go. It just left my brain for a second.
Vaccine.
Oh, yeah. They changed these definitions to fit their agenda. That's neither here nor there, but words do change in meaning over time. And I think that is where a lot of the power also comes, because all of our words have a history, and that's what etymology is, what I was talking about before. A lot of our English words come from Latin. They come from, there's five classical languages: the Chinese, Sanskrit, Persian, Greek, and Latin. And English and a lot of other languages stem from these classical languages. So over time, just by use and by culture and by just time, these words have evolved and changed and turned into the English that we're speaking right now. But it holds all of that history within it. These words hold every iteration behind them. They hold all the energy from all the words behind them. For example, one, I didn't get a lot of, because there's a lot of etymology stuff. There's every word has a history. But one that kind of jumped out at me is the meaning of the word nice. Today we know it as, oh, you're so nice. They just do nice things. I don't even know what the definition of nice is. We just know what nice means.
Yeah.
But it used to mean ignorant, and then it meant silly. And then it meant fussy, and then eventually it became nice. But all of that energy is behind that word. Like, think about when you facetiously call someone nice. Like, oh, that's nice.
That's what I was just going to say. What's so interesting about language, words, and communication in general is we have a thing like sarcasm, where I say yay, that can mean I'm genuinely super pumped and excited for you, or I'm like dreading something.
Yeah.
Like that,
oh, yay.
Yeah. Like that all comes into play when not only in communication with yourself, with others, with God, but just with discernment and interpretation and understanding words, whether you're reading something, listening to your friend talk, talking with your spouse, like it doesn't matter what it is, but you have to be able, it makes it hard, I guess, is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah. Language is difficult, and it's unique too, because it's the only thing that we can use to talk about itself. Like other language or other forms of communication, like animals barking to each other, there is a bark that means something specific. Like there is body language that means I'm scared or I'm happy or I'm hungry. We can read that. We can figure that out with dogs. We can figure that out with a lot of animals. But with humans, the words and the body language and everything together can mean completely different things. Like we can speak sentences, and the same sentence can have completely different meanings depending on the context and the inflection and all these other things. And we can talk about language itself. If a dog barks, it can't have a bark that comments on the nature of its own bark. You know what I'm saying? It can't, it can't like have this metacognition moment where it decides, you know what? Car is too broad of a word. Let's come up with a word for specifically cars that have a big spot in the back where you can carry things. Let's
specific
come up.
Bark.
Yeah. The dogs don't do that specific bark.
You know, I've read one thing that's really interesting. Not about dogs, but about humans is a lot of moms say, because babies obviously fresh out the womb, they don't have any words.
Fresh out the womb.
Yeah. They don't have any words to be able to describe things. All they have is screams and cries, but a lot of moms say that, you know, when you grow somebody in your body for 9 months, there's that biological connection, sure, but there's so much more of a connection there between a mom and the baby. And then when you're going on to take care of and raise that baby as a newborn, you learn what their cries sound like. This is the cry for I'm hungry. This is the one for I'm in pain. I have to go to the bathroom. And it sounds kind of silly to me to think about not having a child, but I can only imagine what that connection must look like. And that's a way of being able to communicate somebody without words.
Exactly. And another interesting thing that I don't even have written down, but I just remembered from when I took a linguistics class in college, is children do not have to be taught how to speak language. That is just incredibly interesting to me.
Right. They just hear it.
You have to teach a child how to write, but a child will just fucking talk one day. And that blows my mind. The parents, I've gone down a rabbit hole of like reading on Reddit about moms saying when they're
children. I watch a lot of mom TikTok videos.
It's interesting.
I know.
But oh my gosh. Did you ever watch Super Nanny?
Uh-uh.
Oh my God. You got to watch Super Nanny. It's a great show. Anyway.
Is it older?
Yeah.
Okay. Maybe I've
it's on like TLC. Be good. That's their. Okay, never mind.
Cute.
Anyway, I don't know. The fun fact about children is you don't have to teach them language and their brains just pick up on it. That's why it's like a cliche rich people thing. I mean, Mexican labor, but also having a nanny that speaks Spanish is actually very beneficial to your child because the child will hear a natural Spanish speaker and then a natural English speaker and they'll just learn both languages. That's why if your parents are first generation of whatever country and they speak in their native language around you, again, you will just learn that language. And so your brain actually, this is kind of a tangent, but there's so many studies that show that children that learn these second languages early on, they just have so much more powerful brains and they are more intelligent in many traditional ways because they've learned both of these languages at the same time. I don't know exactly like the science behind why that makes their cognition better or whatever, but it does give you some perspective on the nature of language. It is something intuitive to us, even though we created it.
Right.
That is what blows my mind. Did we find it or did we invent it? Did we discover it or did we invent it? It's kind of somewhere in between. It's like math. Like it's inherent. Yet we created it and it evolved through us.
I would also be super interested in learning, specifically in the United States, where different accents come from. Like, why do we as Midwesterners have this sound? But if you go four hours south, it's different.
I actually, in my linguistics class in college, my professor was from the South and she was great. It was a really fun class, but
I love a Southern Belle.
She didn't have an accent anymore because she worked really hard to get rid of her accent because she went into this like linguistics degree.
Right. That makes sense.
She was able to like bring it back on command, but she didn't really have an accent. And we talked about where accents come from. And it's again, a lot in the etymology. It's a bunch of Irish people moved to this specific part of the country and they said these things specifically. And then eventually over time, they all just kept speaking English. So they just had an accent that sounded kind of Irish, but kind of American, but kind of this, that, and the other thing. It's really, really interesting, but it's all in this history. And that kind of brings me full circle into this idea that I wanted to really run home with this etymology and semantics talk, is that when you are studying anything, especially spirituality and occult, because it's so old and ancient, you need to remember that language has been evolving forever. It's been evolving over time forever. And not only that, but there are different languages. So when you translate between languages, they're not always going to mean the same thing.
Yeah.
Sure, you heard about this maybe with your yoga stuff, but Sanskrit has allegedly like 96 words for the word love.
I didn't know that specifically, but I do know Sanskrit has like a lot.
It's got a lot. And if you don't know, Sanskrit is one of the classical languages of the East and has a lot of history with yoga and stuff like that.
A lot of yoga postures are said in Sanskrit. Yeah. So like asana is for pose. That's a Sanskrit term for pose.
I think I said a Harry Potter spell.
Alohomora.
Avada Kedavra. Anyway, but yeah, I couldn't find a lot of sources that like gave you all 96 words for the word love. But the sentiment behind that fact is that there's brotherly love, there's romantic love, there's all these different types of love that we don't have words for. And if you're reading some ancient pamphlet in Sanskrit and or like some scroll somewhere that you found, it's in Sanskrit, and you're translating it, and there's all these words, and they're all different words, and all you got is love, and you just keep putting love in for that translation, it's not going to be a good translation. And there's not really much you can do about it. Like, you could describe it more, but then it's not a direct translation. Yeah. So it's gonna be a riddle. It's gonna be something that you need to put meta-linguistic awareness into understanding. And that's the Bible. The Bible, you need to do that. You need to use this awareness and this thought process and this education in semantics and linguistics to read the Bible.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's an ancient fucking book. It's I don't know how old it is, but it was written when after Jesus, I'm assuming.
Well, there's Old Testament and New Testament.
Great. So see, this is pre-Jesus,
post-Jesus.
Very fucking old.
But this was a while ago when we kind of first started toying around with these Bible discussions, but we talked about the fear of the Lord and having a fear of God. And what does that even mean? Because our definition of fear is like being scared, like a scary movie, like, oh, you scared me. But in the Bible, talking about fearing the Lord, it's more of like a reverence and like I don't know about if appreciation is the best word, but probably reverence is the best description I could think of for it. And I think exactly. It's so important, specifically with the Bible, but I think that it could definitely be applied to any text that you're reading.
Absolutely. When it comes to modern or not, but
for sure,
especially older information, even like late 1800s, early 1900s occult texts, they're not using exactly the same English that we're using today. There's been a lot of evolvement in words. I mean, I'm pretty sure in the early 1900s, gay meant happy. And that's only like 100 years ago. So if you were reading an occult textbook and it said the wizard was gay, like, I don't think that means he likes men. Like, it's you got to think a little deeper. But it's really important to pay attention to what these words could mean and do a little more research. Because like you said, with this God fearing, if you were reading the Bible and you did not think that, or not even that you did not think, you didn't put the thought into the meaning of the words when they were written, then you're going to think, I should be afraid of God.
Right.
And I should fucking be scared of him. And that's not, that's not it.
No.
That's not it.
Can say from experience that that's not it.
No. And there's a lot of word examples that are similar to this.
For sure.
The word awesome also, we talked about this in previous episodes before. Today, awesome means like, that's pretty cool. That's interesting. That's exciting. That's awesome. But to break down the roots of that word, awe is reverence, something so incredibly powerful that it leaves you in awe, and some means a little. And I don't, right. I don't know necessarily if that means that, that all those meanings stuck 100, 200, 500 years ago, but that is going to be like the root combination of that word. We don't use it like that today, but if it was in the Bible and it said something about being awesome, it's going to have a little bit different connotation. It's just really, really important to pay attention to these things. And it feels like a very tedious conversation when we have these kind of talks and very like grammar police-esque, but it's important to have this type of thinking in your own life. It's not even necessarily to be on guard about all these definitions and making sure you're using all these words absolutely correctly. It's just the awareness of it.
Yes. And I think more than anything, what one thing that I feel like we're trying to convey is the importance of independent critical thinking, because this isn't about needing to pronounce every word correctly or use it perfectly in a sentence. It's about understanding the words that are being said to you, the words that you're reading, the words that you're using, and how those can have an impact on your life and spirit overall. One thing that I think rings pretty hard in this too is when we get into medical jargon. Mm-hmm. I mean, doctors in that community, they are literally taught certain, they have certain words to describe different procedures, different ingredients and medications and vaccinations and all of those things. And they use those words intentionally, whether they are, I don't know that, I mean, maybe some doctors it's malicious, but I don't think it consciously is malicious, but it makes it to where you and I may not know exactly what that word is, but we don't need to know what that specific word is to understand what it's doing to our bodies.
Mm-hmm.
So it just goes back to this independent thinking and being able to use your mind to have an understanding of what you're saying and what's being said to you. And one more verse that I have in the Bible, going back to this, because we know that they hold frequency and energy, again in John, so it just needs to be more John. But John 15 says, "But if you remain in me and my words remain in you, you may ask for anything you want and it will be granted." So I think a lot of times, specifically in hardcore religious communities, it's kind of taken as if you remain in this ultimate religion or this, whatever their interpretation or depiction of the Bible is, that's how you remain there. But I think what I'm understanding it as is if you remain in that power, in that frequency, in that energy of God, that's how you are able to manifest, use law of attraction, do all those things that we've been talking about this whole time.
Yeah, absolutely. And that is one of the most important things and why you should care about this type of conversation, is because this is going to enrich your life to an extent that seems minor at first, but it compounds and it's exponential how much these paying attention to words can change your surroundings. And it goes in all directions. It goes in the manifestation category, where you use present tense words and you use positive affirmations and you manifest your positive outlook, you manifest your future, you manifest what you want. That's why words are important. But also spiritually, reading into the Bible, reading occult texts, reading things that are intended to help expand your spiritual understanding, words are important there. Not even to mention that words don't even possibly explain most of these concepts that are in the Bible and in these topics that we find interest in talking about. Words can't even possibly describe them. So being able to infer what the meaning of these words really is going to be of benefit to you as well, because these are very abstract concepts. God and spirituality and dimensions and astral projection and astrology, these are things that you have to feel. But the only way we have to communicate them is through language. So you have to feel the energy and the vibrations of the language.
It's like a knowing.
Yeah, it's a knowing. It's an intuition. Like I said, you don't have to teach a child how to talk. They just know how to do it. There's a part of their brain that is literally programmed to understand that. And speaking of program, I'm not even going to get into it because I don't know enough about it, but programming languages, computers, it's mind blowing. We literally created like a magic numbers language to just do whatever we want.
I mean, that's my husband's whole career that he's going to be graduating, you know, this fall with. He shows me all the time when he's doing homework, like, you know, hey, babe, look what I made. And it's this like, yesterday, whatever day it was, he made these links where it was, you could pick like a restaurant and, you know, select which type of food that you might want at that restaurant. And then he showed me what he did to make that appear on the page. And it's just like
words and letters and numbers
in weird symbols and arrows. And I'm like, wow.
Yeah. It's absolutely incredible. It's very Matrix-esque. It's
so weird.
So interesting. I was a computer science major for the first year of college. And then I was like, nope, this is fucking confusing. It just stressed me out because it's so complex and nuanced that you have to kind of have a knack for that type of thinking already. And that's a different conversation entirely, but it does kind of fit into this conversation because words are arbitrary, just like all of those numbers and ones and zeros that create a binary language and programming language and all these different things. They're all arbitrary. We decided that these are going to be the symbols that create this thing, whatever it is. And that gets me into, I just have randomly in my notes says reading symbols. That's another thing I wanted to bring up too, is letters to begin with, because letters are just arbitrary lines that we assigned sounds to, that we assigned combinations to, that we assigned meanings to. So it's just this interesting thing, because a symbol is just a drawing that has this inherent meaning. That's what a sigil is. So letters are these sigils that hold the meaning of the words within them. So how fucking powerful is that? If you're out there making sigils to bring positive energy and manifest your dreams, just use the words. The words are the sigils to begin with. Not that sigils can't be powerful, don't get me wrong, but words are sigils. Language are sigils. So it's already got this deep inherent power. You just have to find it. You have to look back far enough and look for the meaning. You have to use that meta-linguistic awareness.
You know what else is nuts? We have letters, and in like Chinese, for instance, they're letters are completely different than ours. So who gets to decide like which six go in which directions to make our letters that we compose our words, then that we compose our sentences and books and all of these things?
That's another whole conversation too.
Freaking Hebrew is the same way.
Because I believe that our letters are like the Roman letter. I don't know. The like English alphabet is a specific type of letters. And then when you get into languages like Chinese and Japanese that use these characters, and like I took Japanese when I was in middle school. So I remember vaguely learning how to write these letters and stuff. And their whole words, their letters, like kanji and everything, is, it's not necessarily, I mean, some of them are just letters,
but like their whole word, like the symbols are a whole word.
Yeah. And yes and no, because in some forms of, because you can write Japanese in English letters, and you can also write it in kanji, or there's another form of Japanese alphabet. So they're in Chinese, I think, is more like the symbol one entire word.
That's what I'm like thinking. Man.
But in Japanese, they're usually still sounds, but they're still different than English. Like you have like a, e, I, o, u, and then sa, se, si, so, su, and like it's similar to English, but it's just so complicated and confusing and interesting. Language, learning another language is something that I would love to do, but I will I'm not going to do it. I'm just not going to. I can't memorize that much stuff. I just can't. I'm not that type of person who can just memorize that stuff. And I think it would get easier over time, like using it and everything. But that's not something I could do.
This could also bring in a really interesting discussion about music, because going into, again, back to the energy frequency factor, I mean, sound healing is a thing, hertz are a thing. Mm-hmm. So if words already hold this energetic property, when you combine that with music, musical mm-hmm. notes and harmonies and different octaves and things of that nature, I mean, no wonder you can be moved to actual tears by listening mm-hmm. to music, or jumping for joy, or it can change your vibration within your body, because all of it is a frequency. There's sound healings for anxiety, depression, to ground. There's the earth hurts and mm-hmm. all of these other things. I mean,
the binaural beats.
Yes. Everything. Oh God, I love those. I used to listen to those every single morning.
Really?
I've been on a like brown noise, white noise kick lately.
Yeah.
And I love it. I'm also a fan sleeper, so I think that's why. But I could literally just go to the gym and listen to brown noise. And if someone was like, what are you listening to? I would be like, ah.
I would love for you to be like, hey, let me get that aux.
And it's just like.
Oh, the intro for this episode is just going to be white noise. Anyway, that kind of brings me into conspiracy mindset too with this, with the music talk, because as much as the media and news anchors and shit are definitely using words to hypnotize the public. I mean, speaking of words, the word spelling has the word spell in it, and there's this website called etymology.com. Just like go type in words that you're interested in and look at the history of them, because it's really interesting. But they not only are using these words to hypnotize us, and the words have frequencies, but they are also using music and sound to hypnotize us. And speaking of hypnotism to begin with, whenever you think of like a classic, like cliche Hollywood hypnotist moment, there's always a couple main elements. There's the like, ooh, noise, like something like strange and like a binaural beat type thing, like wah, 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 or something like that. And then you have this moving side to side, usually a pocket watch or something
Or like a metronome
type. Right. Or like one of those spiral, the black and white spiral thing. Something that will draw your eyes in. You have something that frequency that draws like your brain and your attention in, and then you have a command and the words that are spoken. It's the combination of all those things that you think of when you think of some cliche Hollywood type hypnotist moment, or at least that's what I think of. But the media and the social engineers are using that exact combination of things to hypnotize you today. They are using big flashy events and colors and lights and big banners on the news to draw you in. The war, COVID, pandemic, all these scary things, they're drawing you in. And then they have low vibrational music that's playing on every channel in every grocery store. They have advertisements absolutely everywhere, drug commercials, all this garbage food, big yellow McDonald's arches, big advertisements everywhere. And then they use these words to solidify it and to tell you, just, I'm loving it. They're bringing you in. So it's just really interesting. And then when you pay attention to, again, this words and the understanding and the meaning behind these words, you start to see it everywhere. Like what I notice these days is all the commercials at gas pumps now, which is fucking terrible that they even exist. But there's so many vaccine commercials. There's so many, like, we live in Michigan, and not that if you smoke weed, it's like the worst thing ever, but there's so many pot dispensary commercials on there now too.
And billboards freaking everywhere.
Which I get that it's a growing industry, so there's that. But it's all about like numb, drink, here's alcohol, here's weed, here's bars, here's something just easy. Don't get healthy. Just get the vaccine. Just, there's no gym ads. There's right. no like vegetable ads. Like,
right. There's nothing that would promote you
to take, actually be healthy.
Yeah. I mean, even take the body positivity movement, because I think that it's one thing to say, I am happy with my body. I want to be in my body. I don't want to harm myself or speak hateful words to myself. That's great.
And at whatever stage, that's great.
Yes, 100%. But if you're unhealthy, I'm just going to say it because I believe it and I'm not, it's fine. If you're unhealthy and you are obscenely overweight, that you should take responsibility for your health. I'm sorry, but I'm not sorry. Absolutely. You should.
No, don't be sorry.
It's a real thing. I mean, if you care about your longevity of your life, the life and legacy that you're leaving behind for your family and your children and generations to come, it's so important to, your health is all you have. It's literal gold. And there is no type of inspiration or motivation from our government, from our media, from anybody to actually do that and take care of your body.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree with all of that. So if you don't have anything else, the last thing I have in my notes is I have just a few examples of some words that I wanted to focus on before next week's episode, which we're going to be talking about John 14 in the Bible. And I wanted to talk about a few words that you should pay attention to the meaning of these words when you're in the Bible. And yeah. So do you have anything else before we move on to that? Or do you want to just move on to that?
Not after my body positivity rant.
Yeah. Great. Perfect. So the first word that I have that I want to talk about the semantics of is the word son. So son is two words in the English language. It is son as in S-O-N, as in a male child, or it is the word sun, S-U-N, as in the sun in the sky. And I think something that I didn't mention before that is important to mention, not only do words have specific meanings and those words also have specific vibrations, like that's just science, like sound vibrations are specific to the sound, but I think it's important in your spiritual journey to pay attention to words that sound the same. So sun and sun are two different words with two different meanings, but they sound exactly the same. And because they sound exactly the same, they are going to be intertwined in some way, period. They're just going to, like any two words that sound exactly the same are going to have spiritual implications that are going to line up. I think that's just in my brain, that's just the way it works, because energetically the vibrations are the same. So those vibrations are going to have relating energies. It's the same as, well, two things that come to mind. In books, there's often like colors and different things used as symbolism in the story.
Yeah.
And it's because the reason those are being used as symbolism in the story is because the energy behind them are similar to the symbol that they are using. So like the energy of the color white is pure and innocent, and the energy of the color red is more seductive or more urgent, or that's why we have red and green stop signs and stuff like that. It's kind of arbitrary, but again, the meaning has been applied to us over history,
yeah,
and over time. So when two words sound the same, you're going to want to pay attention, especially when you're reading occult texts, especially when you're reading the Bible. I mean, even when you're reading just a really good creative work of fiction or anything that uses symbolism, you want to pay attention to those things. So sun and sun. Jordan Maxwell is a researcher that you may have heard of if you are familiar with the conspiracy spirituality conversation. He's been brought up on Tinfoil Hat all the time. I think he just passed away, so that's unfortunate. Rest in peace. R.I.P. Yeah, but he has a ton of lectures on, I think he originated this idea that Christianity is actually a sun worshiping religion, and sun, S-U-N, I should clarify. And although many modern day Christians believe it is a religion about Jesus, and it is, Jesus is a metaphor for the sun, is what Jordan Maxwell teaches. So I found a really interesting lecture from him, and he pointed out quite a few interesting things. And this isn't about John 14 specifically, more just about son. So I don't have any like Bible verses for this, but Jesus rose from the dead and rose again on Easter, all that. That's common knowledge.
Yeah.
What does the sun do every single day? It sets and it dies and it becomes nighttime, and then it rises again and we have daylight again. And Jesus is our savior. And if the sun never rises and it's dark all the time, we're going to die.
I wonder what the moon would represent in all of this. Like, I'd be interested to hear from his perspective.
I didn't go that much into researching that, but I did think of that as well. I believe in this understanding, the moon is the sacred. Well, obviously, sun is sacred masculine, moon is sacred feminine. We've talked about that before. And the Son of God would be like Jesus, would be that like sacred masculine energy. I think the moon is that hidden feminine that Know Thyself is talked about in regards to Christianity all the time. In Gnosticism, she is Sophia. So it's this idea that Christianity hides the feminine away. That's why they use the basic like Christian cross and not the ankh, which is the circle on top of the cross, which represents that feminine. And for whatever reason, over time, they have hidden away the sacred feminine and they don't really talk about it very much. It's like very hidden in the Bible and everything. You have to really read between the lines to find where this sacred feminine energy is in the Bible. And that's again why Jordan Maxwell said that Christianity is a sun worshiping religion. They don't worship the sacred feminine. They worship the sacred masculine, that sun that comes every day. And there are religions and secret societies and cults that worship the stars, that worship the moon, that worship Saturn, that worship all kinds of stuff. And
yeah.
They're hidden in plain sight. They're everywhere. And that's a conversation for another time. But yeah, that would be very interesting to hear, like specifically what Jordan Maxwell would say. But that's what I think it is. And he also talked about how Horus, who was an Egyptian god, there's mythology in which he took 12 steps across the sky, excuse me. And if you rearrange the letters in Horus, it becomes hours, and we have 12 hours in a day. And
there's 24 hours in a day.
Yeah, but 12 hours in a daylight.
Got it.
Then 12 night hours. Okay. And then that's why we break down the clock into 12 instead of just 24 straight military hours stuff kind of thing. And that's like the spiritual reason why we do that and why we don't just all use military time. And there was like, the 12 disciples in the Bible. Horus also had like 12 disciple like I don't know if it's people that
like
I
went, followers basically
it wasn't even really followers because this a lot of this Egyptian information came from like hieroglyphs and pictures and stuff that historians have found over time. So this whole like 12 thing with Horus mostly comes from a picture depicting Horus with 12 spirit-like figures. But there's been a lot of debate in the community. Like I found one article that, because a lot of Christians say that that's not true, because there's a lot of people that have done comparisons between the Egyptian story of Horus and the story of Jesus, and they're like almost the same. They're like almost identical. So Christians are like, no, Jesus, not Horus. That's not true.
Classic.
Yeah. And then people, obviously, there's been a lot of debate on that. But again, I'm just pointing out how it's very interesting that sun and sun, Jesus and Horus and all these very similar things, and how Jesus died and was resurrected and the sun, like that would be a very good allegory for that kind of thing. Not making any personal opinions on that. Just stating, again, we're just talking about the cognition and the, metalinguistic awareness of the words. So when you're reading the Bible, you want to keep that in mind. And I do think that the energy of Jesus and the idea of the path of Jesus do align with like the sun energy and like the energy of the S-U-N sun in astrology. And like Leo is the sign that is ruled by the sun, and the Leo energy, when it is not egotistical, is very Jesus-y. The lion and all that. Isn't there something lion symbolism in the Bible?
God is like the Lion of Judah.
Got it. That's, sorry, just getting sidetracked now. But anyway.
I think I'd have to look into it, but I know that there's the Lion of Judah remark somewhere in there.
Anyway, very interesting. There's a lot of astrological symbolism in the Bible, and that's a conversation for another time. But that is one example of a word that I would pay attention to. And then another one that's even more specific to what we're going to be talking about in the next episode is the word house or mansion. And mansion, it's different in different translations, but it's usually my father has many mansions, I believe. Mm-hmm. And literally, a mansion is a big house with lots of rooms in it. I think we could do some conversation about the etymology of mansion, and it might be a little different, but I don't have a lot of stuff written down about that. But it is a building. It is something that, because house, not only is it like a house, like a literal building, but it's also, you can house somebody.
Yeah.
Somewhere. It can be a verb. It can be something, it can be like to provide shelter with. It can be something meaning kept in or frequenting, like I am often housed in this building or whatever. And it's also as in the zodiac houses,
yeah,
or the different categories of energy that are within the zodiac. And we'll have to have a whole episode or series of episodes on astrology one day, but that's a big undertaking.
Yeah.
And that's something just to keep in mind, because in John 14, which we're going to talk about in the next episode, it feels kind of out of nowhere in the conversation. Like, John 14 is a really short chapter, so you can read through it several times and still be really confused. But Jesus is just like, my father has many mansions, and they're like trying to ask him about like, no, but like, who's God? Like, tell us who's God is. And he's like, my dad has many mansions. Like,
and if you want more context, I would highly recommend reading the book of John in entirety, because it still requires some interpretation. It's still for kind of like, I'm sorry, what? But it gives you a little bit more context than just like, yo, my dad has a place for you in some mansion.
Yeah.
And they're like, how? And you're like, my dad has a mansion.
And you know the way.
And I am it.
And you, yeah.
And have you not been listening?
Yeah, that's it. That literally is what it is.
Just listen.
Yeah. We'll talk about that more in the next episode. But I wanted to talk about the word house because it does sound kind of random. And I didn't read John 13 or anything before that, so I was purely going off of John 14. And
I just had to know. I think knowing is an ever evolving thing, especially when it comes to studying and meditating and learning the Bible. But I just needed a little bit more context, and I think even some of those verses that I mentioned today in the book of John provide that sort of gateway into what we're going to be talking about next week. And that's why we wanted to even have this episode beforehand, because there's a lot of words and the words can mean a lot of different things.
Absolutely. And when Jesus says, my father has many mansions, is he literally talking about mansions, like giant houses?
Better be. I want like cribs in this bitch.
The apostles are like, what the fuck? Where's my room? Like, you said there was many mansions and I don't have one.
God just gives MTV Cribs tours to all the disciples.
Can we please write a parody? Like, that would be such a good Portlandia episode or something. Oh my gosh.
And like, here's my pearly gates. And I have streets made out of gold, so fuck you.
Yeah. So fuck you. Do you have gold streets?
It's real gold. I think not.
Oh my God. But no, I don't think Jesus was literally talking about mansions. And so we have to understand what he means by mansions. And I think it could be a lot of different things. And again, we'll talk about that all in the next episode. But mansions could be a symbol for something, like the houses of the zodiac. It could be a way of saying my father or God has many different energies that can be manifested in. It could be many different, like if you think of, because when I think of the word house or mansion, I think of a family living in that house or somebody living in that house, usually a family. And if there's many mansions, there's many different houses, and there's many different families, and those families are all going to be a little different, and they're going to live a bit differently. But God has many mansions, so it doesn't matter what mansion you're a part of, or what family, or what house, or what energy, or what zodiac sign you're a part of. It's the idea that there are many different iterations of that.
I think one potential interpretation of that could also be we're the mansions.
Yeah.
We're the houses. Absolutely. Because our bodies are a temple of the Holy Spirit. Like, we know this from the Bible. So if God has many mansions, that means that he has many houses, and that would be all of us. And like, there are a lot of us. Mm-hmm. So,
or even that if you think about a mansion as being able to house a lot of people, and if you were a caring, loving person, and like God or Jesus, I would assume be, you would invite a lot of people in. So there's a lot of room to be housed. God always has room in his mansion for you, is another way you could take that particular phrase, or even just the word mansion when used in the context of the Bible or of a spiritual text.
Yeah.
So yeah, that is the two kind of words I really wanted to touch on before going into next week's episode and really talking about that. And I have so many notes for the next episode we're going to record. So really excited about that. But is there anything else you wanted to add to this episode before we peace out?
I think I'm good.
No? Well, DM us and let us know your favorite word.
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 Well, bye.
Bye.
Hello, Homura.
Avada Kedavra.